This text was prepared by Donald Leinson, charlie@idirect.com. The Christmas Books of Mr. M. A. Titmarsh by William Macapus Thackeray. Contents. Christmas Stories. Mrs. Perkins Ball, R Street, Dr. Birch, and his young friends, the Kickleberries on the Rhine, the Rose and the Ring, or The History of Prince Giglio and Prince Bobo, Mrs. Perkins Ball, The Mulligan of Ballymulligan, and How We Went to Mrs. Perkins Ball. I do not know where Ballymulligan is, and never knew anybody who did. Once I asked the Mulligan the question, when that chieftain assumed a look of dignity so ferocious, and spoke of Axon Curiosity in a tone of such evident displeasure, that, as after all it can matter very little to me whereabouts lies the Celtic principality in question, I have never pressed the inquiry any farther. I don't know even the Mulligan's town residence. One night, as he bade us adieu in Oxford Street, "Live there," says he, pointing down towards Oxbridge, "with the big stick he carries, so his abode is in that direction at any rate. He has his letters addressed to several of his friends' houses, and his parcels, and see are left for him at various taverns which he frequents. That pair of check trousers, in which you see him attired, he did me the favor of ordering from my own tailor, who is quite as anxious as anybody to know the address of the wearer. In like manner my hatter asked me, who was the Irish gent as had ordered 4 hats, and a sable boar to be sent to my lodgings? As I did not know, however I might guess, the articles have never been sent, and the Mulligan has withdrawn his custom from the infernal 4-and-9-penny scoundrel, as he calls him. The hatter has not shut up shop in consequence. I became acquainted with the Mulligan through a distinguished countryman of his, who, strange to say, did not know the chieftain himself. But dining with my friend Fred Clancy, of the Irish Bar, at Greenwich, the Mulligan came up, introduced himself to Clancy as he said, claimed relationship with him on the side of Brian Boru, and drawing his chair to our table, quickly became intimate with us. He took a great liking to me, was good enough to find out my address, and pay me a visit. Since which period often and often on coming to breakfast in the morning I have found him in my sitting room on the sofa engaged with the rolls and morning papers. And many a time, on returning home at night for an evening's quiet reading, I have discovered this honest fellow in the armchair before the fire, perfuming the apartment with my cigars, and trying the quality of such liquors as might be found on the sideboard. The way in which he pokes fun at Betsy, the maid of the lodgings, is prodigious. She begins to laugh whenever he comes. If he calls her a duck, a divil, a darlin', it is all one. He is just as much a master of the premises as the individual who rents them at 15 shillings a week. And as for handkerchiefs, shirt collars, and the like articles of fugitive haberdashery, the loss since I have known him is unaccountable. I suspect he is like the cat in some houses. For, suppose the whiskey, the cigars, the sugar, the tea caddy, the pickles, and other groceries disappear, all is laid upon that edaxery rum of a Mulligan. The greatest offense that can be offered to him is to call him Mr. Mulligan. Old you deprive me, sir, says he, of the title which was borne by me princely ancestors in 100,000 battles? In our own green valleys and forests, in the American savannas, in the Sierras of Spain and the flats of Flanders, the Saxon has quailed before me war cry of Mulligan Abu. Mr. Mulligan. I'll pitch anybody out of the window who calls me Mr. Mulligan. He said this, and uttered the slogan of the Mulligans with a shriek so terrific, that my uncle the Rev. W. Gruels, of the Independent Congregation, Bungay, who had happened to address him in the above obnoxious manner, while sitting at my apartments drinking tea after the May meetings, instantly quitted the room, and has never taken the least notice of me since, except to state to the rest of the family that I am doomed irrevocably to perdition. Well, one day last season, I had received from my kind and most estimable friend, Mrs. Perkins of Pocklington Square, to whose amiable family I have had the honor of giving lessons in drawing, French, and the German flute, an invitation couched in the usual terms, on satin gilt-edged notepaper, to her evening party, or, as I call it, ball. Besides the engraved note sent to all her friends, my kind patroness had addressed me privately as follows. My dear Mr. Titmarsh, if you know any very eligible young man, we give you leave to bring him. You gentlemen love your club so much now, and care so little for dancing, that it is really quite a scandal. Come early, and before everybody, and give us the benefit of all your taste and continental skill. Your sincere Emily Perkins. Whom shall I bring? Mused I, highly flattered by this mark of confidence. And I thought of Bob Trippett, and little Fred Spring, of the Navy Pay Office, Hulker, who is rich, and I knew, took lessons in Paris, and a half score of other bachelor friends, who might be considered as very eligible, when I was roused from my meditation by the slap of a hand on my shoulder. And looking up, there was the mulligan, who began, as usual, reading the papers on my desk. What's this? Says he. Hose Perkins? Is it a supper ball, or only a tay ball? The Perkinses of Pocklington Square, Mulligan, are tip-top people, says I, with a tone of dignity. Mr. Perkins' sister is married to a baronet, Sir Giles Bacon, of Hogwash, Norfolk. Mr. Perkins' uncle was Lord Mayor of London, and he was himself in Parliament, and may be again any day. The family are my most particular friends. A table indeed. Why, Gunter. Dot here I stopped. I felt I was committing myself. Gunter, says the mulligan, with another confounded slap on the shoulder. Aunt say another word. I'll go with you, my boy. You go, mulligan? Says I colon why, really I it's not my party. Here what? What's this letter? And I an eligible young man? Is the descendant of a thousand kings unfit company for a miserable tallow chancellor in Cockney? Are ye joking with me? For, let me tell ye, I don't like them jokes. D'ye suppose I'm not as well born and bred as yourself, or any Saxon friend ye ever had? I never said you weren't, mulligan, says I, ye don't mean seriously, that a mulligan is not fit company for a Perkins? My dear fellow, how could you think I could, so far insult you? Says one. Well then, says he, that's a matter settled, and we go. What the deuce was I to do? I wrote to Mrs. Perkins, and that kind lady replied, that she would receive the mulligan, or any other of my friends, with the greatest cordiality. Ansi a party, all mulligans. Thought I, with a secret terror. Mr. and Mrs. Perkins, their house, and their young people. Following Mrs. Perkins' orders, the present writer made his appearance very early at Pocklington Square, where the tastiness of all the decorations elicited my warmest admiration. Supper, of course, was in the dining room, superbly arranged by Messrs. Griggs and Spooner, the confectioners of the neighborhood. I assisted my respected friend Mr. Perkins and his butler in decanting the sherry, and saw, not without satisfaction, a large bath for wine under the sideboard, in which were already placed very many bottles of champagne. The back dining room, Mr. P.'s study where the venerable man goes to sleep after dinner, was arranged on this occasion as a tea room, Mrs. Flouncey, Miss Fanny's maid, officiating in a cap and pink ribbons, which became her exceedingly. Long, long before the arrival of the company, I remarked Master Thomas Perkins and Master Giles Bacon, his cousin, son of Sir Giles Bacon, Bart. Comma in this apartment, busy among the macaroons. Mr. Gregory the butler, besides John the footman and Sir Giles' large man in the bacon livery, and honest Grunzel, carpet beater and green grocer, of Little Pocklington Buildings, had at least half a dozen of aides-de-camp in black with white neckcloths, like doctors of divinity. The back drawing room door on the landing, being taken off the hinges and placed upstairs under Mr. Perkins' bed. The orifice was covered with muslin and festooned with elegant wreaths of flowers. This was the dancing saloon. A linen was spread over the carpet, and a band consisting of Mr. Clapperton, piano, Mr. Pinch, harp, and Herr Spoff, cornet, a piston arrived at a pretty early hour, and were accommodated with some comfortable negus in the tea room, previous to the commencement of their delightful labors. The boudoir to the left was fitted up as a card room. The drawing room was of course for the reception of the company, the chandeliers and yellow damask being displayed this night in all their splendor, and the charming conservatory over the landing was ornamented by a few moonlight lamps, and the flowers arranged so that it had the appearance of a fairy bower. And Miss Perkins, as I took the liberty of stating to her mama, looked like the fairy of that bower. It is this young creature's first year in public life. She has been educated, regardless of expense, at Hammersmith, and a simple white muslin dress and blue ceinture set off charms, of which I beg to speak with respectful admiration. My distinguished friend the Mulligan of Ballymulligan was good enough to come the very first of the party. By the way, how awkward it is to be the first of the party. And yet you know somebody must. But for my part, being timid, I always wait at the corner of the street in the cab, and watch until some other carriage comes up. Well, as we were arranging the sherry in the decanters down the supper tables, my friend arrived, colon, where's me friend Mr. Titmarsh? I heard him bawling out to Gregory in the passage, and presently he rushed into the supper room, where Mr. and Mrs. Perkins and myself were, and as the waiter was announcing Mr. Mulligan, he Mulligan of Ballymulligan, ye blackguard, roared he, and stalked into the apartment, apologizing, as he said, for introducing himself. Mr. and Mrs. Perkins did not perhaps wish to be seen in this room, which was for the present only lighted by a couple of candles, but he was not at all abashed by the circumstance, and grasping them both warmly by the hands, he instantly made himself at home. As friends of my dear and talented friend Mick, so he is pleased to call me, I'm delighted, madam, to be made known to ye. Don't consider me in the light of a mere acquaintance. As for you, my dear madam, you put me so much in mind of my own blessed mother, now residing at Ballymulligan Castle, that I begin to love ye at first sight. At which speech Mr. Perkins, getting rather alarmed, asked the Mulligan whether he would take some wine or go upstairs. Fakes, says Mulligan, tea's never too soon for a good drink. And although he smelt very much of whiskey already, he drank a tumbler of wine. Oh, the improvement of an acquaintance which commences in a manner so delightful. Let's go upstairs, Mulligan, says I, and led the noble Irishman to the upper apartments, which were in a profound gloom, the candles not being yet illuminated, and where we surprised Miss Fanny, seated in the twilight at the piano, timidly trying the tunes of the polka which she danced so exquisitely that evening. She did not perceive the stranger at first, but how she started when the Mulligan loomed upon her. Heavenly enchantress, says Mulligan, don't fly at the approach of the humblest of your sleeves. Resume your place at that instrument, which weeps harmonious, or smiles melodious, as you cherim it. Are you acquainted with the Warish melodies? Can he play, who fears to talk of 98? Apostrophe apostrophe the Shan Van Vaught? Apostrophe or the dirge of Alam Fadla? Apostrophe, who's this mad chap that Titmarsh has brought? I heard Master Bacon exclaim to Master Perkins, "Ugh! How frightened Fanny looks!" "Oh pooh! Gals are always frightened," Fanny's brother replied. But Giles Bacon, more violent, said, "I'll tell you what, Tom. If this goes on, we must pitch into him. And so I have no doubt they would." When another thundering knock coming, Gregory rushed into the room, and began lighting all the candles, so as to produce an amazing brilliancy. Miss Fanny sprang up, and ran to her mama, and the young gentleman slid down the banisters, to receive the company in the hall. Everybody begins to come, but especially Mr. Minchin. It's only me and my sisters, Master Bacon said. Though lime and eight in this instance. All the young ladies had fresh cheeks and purple elbows. All had white frocks, with hair more or less auburn. And so a party was already made of this blooming and numerous family, before the rest of the company began to arrive. The three Miss Meggetts next came in their fly. Mr. Blades and his niece from 19 in the square. Captain and Mrs. Struther, and Miss Struther. Dr. Toddy's two daughters and their mama. But where were the gentlemen? The Mulligan, great and active as he was. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.